Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Welcome to Vox Novus, the new voice. When we hear the word fairy, just about everyone envisions little winged beings flitting about in the garden or forest, creating magic and sometimes mischief. Are fairies real? What is the foundation of the lore behind them, and how may we embrace fairy magic in our lives? Returning to Vox Novus this week, my dear friend Dr. Kak Young has made a study of fairy life and how we may connect with this enchanted realm. Kak is the author of 25 books on the metaphysical and magical. She's been a producer, writer, and director in Hollywood television industry for more than 25 years. Kak has also earned a PhD in natural health and a doctorate in naturopathy. She completed 36 courses in nutrition from Baylor University. Using her third doctorate degree in clinical hypnotherapy, she helps people manage weight control, smoking cessation, behavior modification, stress reduction, past life regression, and phobia management. When not writing or teaching, Kak travels the globe, experiencing the energies of international sacred sites and working with advanced masters from many traditions. Her website is kakyoung.com, and she joins me this week to share her latest book, Living the Fairy Life, a guide to connecting with the magic, power, and joy of the enchanted realm. Please join me in welcoming back to Vox Novus, Kak Young. Welcome, Kak.
Thank you, Victor. I am so happy to be back with you.
And I'm so happy to have you with us to share your new book, Living the Fairy Life. So as I shared when I interviewed you last year, when you had your book out, Crystal Power, your life and interests are multifaceted and have spanned the entertainment world to natural healing to metaphysical concepts. For our listeners meeting you for the first time, please tell us about your amazing path.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I really believe that entertainment and show business and healing are not that far apart. And I got my wake-up call when I was actually a stage manager on the Cher series for CBS. And I was the second stage manager. I was in my 20s. And our lovely senior stage manager was just wonderful. He was so good to me. And he was a former dancer. And now he was stage managing. And he was really, really a prolific and professional at his craft. So one morning, we get there at 7:15. And he dropped dead in front of me.
Oh, my.
And yeah. And I was shocked. So I had to jump into action. I was suddenly the lead stage manager, and we had a couple of guests you might recall on that. Elton John was one. Michael Jackson was another one. It was a big show that week, and I had these megastars, and I think Ike and Tina Turner showed up. Oh, so there I was running around. I mean, my kids were on fire. So I got finished that night, fell into my bed and said, you know, this didn't happen as a coincidence. This is a wake-up call. So from that day forward, I became interested in health and definitely healing. There was no reason in my mind that this guy should have dropped dead at the age of 55, but he did. So that launched me on a career. And just the second part of this is that during when you work in television, and whether it's a stage manager or all the way up to a director or an executive, as I got there through the years, you have this thing called a hiatus, and it's about 6 to 8 weeks long in between production schedule. That's when the writers go to work and write the script and develop the shows for the next shooting season. So all the production people have that time off. And I began to utilize it by studying with shamans and metaphysical teachers around the world. It was easy for me to go to England and study with someone, or go to France, or go to Asia. It was just easy for me to do for 6 weeks or even a shorter period. So I immersed myself in what was available in terms of healing teachers at that time. And that's how I did it. That's how I kind of balanced my life between the breakneck schedule of show business and trying to live a healthy, happy, balanced, emotionally balanced life.
That's wonderful. Before we discuss living the fairy life, many of our listeners adore their feline companions, and you've authored two books about this, The 1 Minute Cat Manager and Natural Healing for Cats. Please share the essence of those two lovely books.
Oh, I would love to. Yes. When I was an executive at Universal Studios, I had a challenge in that I was traveling a lot at the time, and I had this beautiful cat, Lucy, and she really put me through my paces in terms of guilt trips, because she would look at me and, why are you going? Why are you leaving me? Wait a minute. So I used Ken Blanchard's book, The 1 Minute Manager, for some of my duties at work in order to handle my staff and deal with all the corporate stuff. And I decided to apply that to my cat, Lucy. So in essence, what it is I take people through a training where you concentrate for 1 minute on your cat as the single focus. As you come back to your house at night, that's their minute. Nothing matters. And before you leave in the morning, you focus on them for 1 minute. That's all that matters. And it made such a difference that I began to teach people this, and it developed into a book with all kinds of, it's a real healing book for felines and their caregivers. And then the second book is the natural healing for cats, including Bach flower remedies and behavioral adjustment. And what I do with that is allow a gentle way, a gentle approach to help cats and to help their caregivers really understand the emotional differences of cats between the breeds and the things that make cats so special and great companions. So it's a gentle, non-toxic way to help cats in the natural world adapt to stress, moving, vacations, whatever's going on, another cat. And I love the approach of using the Bach flowers, because it's gentle, it can be used all the time, and cats, or all animals, really respond beautifully to the gentleness of the vibrational Bach flowers.
Now, just for a second, to get back to 1 Minute Cat Manager, are cats really manageable?
Yes, of course. Yes, of course. You're not going to be able to get a drill team of cats to march in a parade to the beat, but you can manage them in ways. And really, the hint that I want people to get is that you really manage yourself and make yourself knowledgeable in their world and really adapt to their needs. That's really where the management comes in. But it's and then the cats respond. So it's beautiful. It's just a beautiful experience. And I think anybody who wants to have a cat in their life should have both books, one for their health and one for their behavior.
Wonderful. Your latest book, and I believe, am I correct, this is number 24?
Actually, it's number 25.
25?
Who's counting?
What a prolific author you are. It's called Living the Fairy Life. What inspired this book?
Well, it's very funny. I was pitching a book to Brendan Knight of Mango Publications, the Mango Group. And she said, no, I really don't want that book, but could you write us a book on fairies? And, I'm in show business and we all learn to say, yes, of course. And then we figure it out later. That's just kind of like how you get through the work there. So I said, sure, Brenda, absolutely. When would you like it? And she said, oh, about 3 or 4 months. And I, wow. So now I've been, fairies have been in my life. I come from Celtic roots, and so my grandmother would tell stories about fairies, and I've had some experiences with fairies, and I have a fairy garden. So I thought, well, I don't know how I'm going to write a whole book about it, but we'll see. So, Victor, I literally sat down out just right downstairs at my dining room table, overlooking the fairy garden. And it started to come. The book just came. I was the typist for the fairies. Let's just say that. They'd said, okay, here's what we want people to know, and da 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 da. So I just began typing. It organized itself. It did this whole thing, and I said to Brenda, you're a fairy too, because this was just inspired. You must be a mouthpiece for the fairies. So it was all magic. I wrote the book in 5 weeks, and we didn't change a thing. It was just an amazing experience. I've never had one like that before.
Wonderful. Growing up in the 1950s, my first awareness of fairies came from watching Mary Martin playing Peter Pan on television and her asking the audience to clap our hands to enliven the fairy Tinkerbell, who became an enduring symbol of the Disney organization afterwards. She was drawn as this adorable tiny woman with wings and a magic wand. Was that portrayal accurate?
In Walt Disney's mind, sure. I think what he conveyed was the charm from the fairy world, but not much more. And I think that people who, wear little necklaces with little fairies with wings, a fairy can show up that way. But mostly, fairies are supernatural beings who are connected to the energies of the planet, nature, stars, and the domains under the earth. So they have the magical powers that we know about. They also can transfigure themselves, transmorph themselves into other things. They can be a bird, they can be some other form or shape than Walt Disney's creation. And our job is just to be open to an energy or to a being that shows up that has the qualities from the fairy world, which is the connection to the planets, nature, the stars, and the domains above, on, and below the earth.
So what we're establishing here is that fairies are most certainly real.
Yes, they are. It's just, can we and do we recognize them?
What is the origin of the name fairy, and are there different names for them in different cultures and mythologies?
Yes, everybody has a different idea of what. Well, fairies actually were created because it's sort of like when, little Johnny looks up to his parent and says, Mom, why is the sky blue? Well, Johnny, the sky is blue because I don't know, some angels sprinkled a whole bunch of blue paint. Parents and cultures have made up stories about everything, the creation myth, fairies. There's just stories that go back as far as people have been alive because they have to explain things. And I have a theory that fairies are just explanations for strange things that happen that we don't that we can't otherwise identify. So if somebody spills something, it's, oh, the fairy did it, or something happens, or a cow is missing, oh, the fairies took it. So I think it also answers the need for superstition, the need for charms. Fairies really answer a lot of questions in a lot of cultures. So I think that we and they are called different names. For example, in the Arabic world, they are both jinns and djinns. So the jinns are the good fairies, and the djinns are the bad fairies.
And the word fairy itself, is that Celtic in origin?
Yes, it is.
And that's the fae we're talking about.
Yes, it's the fae, and it also goes back to Latin, and it goes back to Italians, and it goes back to the French. Every single culture has had their own take on what fairy means, how it comes, how you spell it. It comes from a verb, it comes from a noun. It's a thing that has been passed down.
And are fairies sometimes thought of as angels? Is there any connection between the two?
Yes, well, I think a lot of people do confuse angels and fairies, and there are energies that are positive, there are energies that are neutral, and there are energies that maybe go in the opposite direction. Just like an element like water, you can have a beautiful pond that is restful and peaceful. You can have a lovely waterfall that's wonderful, and then you can have Niagara Falls, or you can have a tsunami. So water can take its shape of in various different natural forms. So can angels, and so can the angel energy, and so can the fairies and the fairy energy. So it just becomes how you want to identify them. Are they the cherubim and the seraphim, and do they sit at the right hand of God? I don't know. It depends on what you believe is God. What is God to you? What does that matter? And are there angels? I think all of that is just a product of pre-Hollywood creative thinking. I think you have to just really recognize fairies as energy and angels as energy, and then you can dress them up any way you want to, and maybe they will show up differently in your life. I'm not being specific because when we get specific, we want to color them in. We want to color in the lines and make them all look alike. But if we remain open to what an energetic presence or force might be in our lives, then we really get to experience the magic that they bring.
And what is the realm of the fairies? Where do they come from?
Well, I think the Norse and the Japanese really have the best explanations for fairies and where they come from. And that is, there is an upper world of fairies, and those are your beings from the cosmos, the ones really connected to the stars and the planets and the ethers. And then you have the fairies of the earth, which are more like the workers. They're the ones that we probably see the most. And then you have the fairies that live underground. In Irish and Celtic lore, it is the Tuatha Dé Danann, and they are the shining ones. They fought three battles in Ireland for dominance. They lost the last battle to the Milesians, and they were given a choice. They were not banned from the land per se, they were just told to live underground, and the Milesians would live above ground. So the Shining Ones went underground, and they became the fairy lore of Ireland. And those are the ones that in the West we hear the most about because, the Italians have their version too. So maybe if your family's Italian, you've heard a different kind of lore, but there's a lot of the Irish beliefs that come into our country and to our culture.
Are leprechauns considered fairies?
To buy some, sure. And those are probably made up as well. You got leprechauns with their little hats and their little signs and their little pots of gold and their rainbows. And, they're akin to Tinkerbell. They have been drawn and concocted by someone with a lot of pretty colored pencils. But I don't know that they really exist. There are authors and poets that have said they've attended a leprechaun funeral or they've seen a leprechaun party. What they probably see are entity energies that have taken on certain forms. And, we as humans like to name things. We want to label them and name them and call them something and put them on a shelf. So I think we have to continue to be open to how they appear and how they show up. And you just know that with your inner knowing. That's all you do is you just kind of open your heart and your mind and you say, is this fairy energy? Is what am I sensing? And then you could begin to prepare your home, prepare your mind, prepare your heart, and then you will be able to interact with these magnificent beings that come in all shapes and sizes.
I was just going to ask you, we think of fairies through the lore and the literature and the fairy tales as tiny beings. Do they manifest in larger forms too?
Well, I love the author Neil Gaiman, and I love the series American Idols, American Gods, because he has taken mind-bending ideas. That's the only way I can explain it. Is that in fact his fairy is a tall 6-foot guy, and he is redheaded, and he's clumsy, and he drinks too much, and he gets in trouble, and he's lost his luck. He's lost his luck in the form of a gold coin, but he can make gold for you or for me. It comes right out of his hands. He can't help himself, but he can help others. And so he's pretty amazing when you think of him as a fairy. They also have a djinn and a djinn on the show. So they have the Arabic version of the good fairy and the bad fairy. And the djinn is always stirring up trouble for people, putting out the invisible threads that they trip over. And it's very interesting because he has these fairies interacting from all these different cultures. And it works. It's just an amazing way to tell a story through fairies. They shatter our belief system, and then we say, ah, yes, no, but what I do recognize is the magic. I recognize the ability. And that's what's fascinating about, I think, that show and those fairies as represented on TV.
And of course, the djinn or djinn is where we get the expression the genie that comes from the bottle and all of that lore.
Bingo, you win the
Bingo.
prize.
Thank you. My guest is Kak Young. We're talking about her new book, Living the Fairy Life, A Guide to Connecting with the Magic, Power, and Joy of the Enchanted Realm. Kak, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you.
Well, the book, you can get it online at your favorite bookseller, Barnes and Noble, Amazon, of course, wherever you buy books. Your favorite, it's like I said, distributed by Mango. So it's online, I think, on their site as well. Just available everywhere. Living the Fairy Life, spelled Fairy.
And your website.
My website is Kak Young, that's a KAC, Kitchen Apple Charlie, kakyoung.com.
And we'll be back with more of Kak and Living the Fairy Life after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Back on Vox Novus, my guest this week is Kak Young. We're talking about her book, Living the Fairy Life.
Kak, in the book you mention this wonderful story about Helen Keller Squirrel. Please tell us about her.
Oh, I would be delighted to. Well, I moved from Los Angeles up to Cambria, California, and it is famous for its tall pines and oaks. They're called Cambria pines. And I bought a place that had about 2 acres of these beautiful trees everywhere. It was very peaceful and wonderful. And among our guests, which we had deer and turkey and an occasional bobcat, we had squirrels. And they played on the trees and they played on the decks. And coming from Los Angeles, I had only had squirrels a few times, not really frequently, so I wasn't familiar what to do with them. Well, they were always around looking for something, and I lived with a lot of glass, so they're always peeking in. And one day this squirrel, she was blind in one eye, so she could only look at you with a certain side of her face. She kind of came up and wandered and hung out and looked in, and she wasn't as energetic as the other squirrels, but she was definitely very sweet. So I had some, I had some nuts, mixed nuts, and I put them out on the deck for her. And she sorted through them. She said, well, I like this. I don't like this. I like that. And then she looked at me like, okay, that was nice. Do you have anything else maybe? And so I put some pretzels out and I said, how are we doing, ma'am? Are we making you happy? And she was very sweet. Well, Helen became our friend. Helen was there in the morning. Helen had a favorite tree that she would look into the kitchen. And she got polite enough to not bother us while we were having breakfast or coffee or something. But she would come every morning and look around and see what was there. So I bought her different peanuts and different selections of things and tried to keep her happy. And she was absolutely great fun. And if I would move from the office into another room, Helen would she would scoot along and she would be there. So she was there about 3 years, and we named her Helen Keller Squirrel because of her blindness, because she had a lot of wisdom and a lot of sweetness. I mean, she would stare in at the cats and the cats would look at her, but they wouldn't mess with her. Helen had an authority about her. And one time we had friends up for their 25th anniversary, wedding anniversary, and we had a little renewal and vow renewal ceremony on the beach, and then came home and I had a cake for them. And Helen was right there. She was right outside the screen door. So we gave her a little piece of cake. And I have pictures of Helen enjoying the cake and looking in and looking at us. She was just part of the family. We said, good morning, Helen. We said, good night, Helen. And then one day Helen came to say good night, and she was very feeble by this time. She was very feeble, and she came and she sat very quietly and patiently, and we said, you know, there's something not right. And Helen walked her usual places but very slowly. And then she went down the stairs and looked back on every step, and we just knew that was the last time. That was her goodbye.
As I shared with you before we began the show, last year, 2020, we had a visitor that had one eye, a squirrel with one eye. It looked like he perhaps had lost it in a fight. And so the one eye was closed, and I named him Popeye. And Popeye was to us, as Helen Keller Squirrel was to you, a constant companion. He'd be there in the morning when I'd open the door. He'd stand up on his hind legs and raise his front little paws, begging for the hazelnuts that I would feed him, and meet me in the afternoon for the same, and just adorable. And it's interesting about squirrels. You start to learn about their behavior and who they are and their personalities, and they're quite unique in the animal field, at least in the wild animal field, the way they operate. So I have total compassion for your Helen Keller squirrel story. Thank you for sharing that.
Well, yeah, we really thought about it later and said, you know, Helen was a fairy because she brought joy, she was connected to the earth, and she just chose to be in a squirrel suit in order to interact and connect with us. She was there all the time. She was part of that. We had some sadness during that time up there, and Helen was right there. I mean, literally leaning against the door, what can I do? You know, it was amazing, and I realized there she had healing properties. She was definitely a member of the Fae.
And Popeye, I feel the same way about Popeye, so thank you for sharing that. That was beautiful. I recently found a large toadstool in our tiny urban garden here in New York, and a friend asked me to look for more, possibly in a circle, and refer to this as a fairy ring. What is the association between fairies and mushrooms?
Well, there's about 40 answers there, but I'll give you the top couple. One, fairies eat a lot of natural products. To them, a hallucinogenic product is like a daily fare for them, and it doesn't affect them like it does humans because they live in an altered state to begin with. So fairies will eat mushrooms, fairies will play on mushrooms, fairies will dance in the circle of the mushrooms. You know, to the fairy, the mushroom is as sacred as the cow is in India. So they love them, they play with them, they have great times. And for the small fairies, the ones that come back as small beings, they are shelter. And if they are in a circle, it's like the caravans of the Old West. They feel protected, they feel encircled, and they love the energy of the circle. It's their own sort of like edible Stonehenge.
So fairies are into what we used to call in the 60s and 70s shrooms.
Yeah, they be interested in shrooms big time.
Are there other plants that fairies favor?
Oh, yes. The foxglove, for example, is another one. Why? Because it's entertainment as well as beautiful. They take the foxglove blossom, they turn it upside down, and they can drink out of it. That becomes their margarita glass. So they can drink out of that. They like all kinds of they like pansies because they have a face. The fairies love that. It makes them laugh. They love snapdragons because when you squeeze the back end, you can make a puppet out of it. Anything that you can play with and have fun with. They like maidenhair ferns because they dance in the wind. They love weeping willows because they can bend, and the fairies can dance on them and swing on them. When you think about fairies and what they love, think very childlike, because that's who they are. They are unsullied in terms of their creative thinking and their creative creativity. They are just full of interesting ways to look at how the grass moves, how the wind blows things in the trees. I planted the bleeding heart plant for them that has hearts that hang down. They were thrilled. They just loved it because fairies can blow on them and make them dance in the wind. Anything that you can play with, anything that is colorful, anything that smells wonderful. So I've made a list in my book about the trees that fairies like, the flowers that fairies love, the herbs that they're really attracted to. So if you decide that you like fairies and you like that energy, then you want to plant things for them that's going to attract them. You can kind of say, does this plant attract bees? Ah, good. Then it'll bring on the fairies, because fairies love bees. They think bees are magic creatures. And they are, because aerodynamically, bees can't fly. And that makes fairies laugh when they do, because their wings aren't supposed to work. But the fairies, they love that.
You mentioned their fascination and love of mushrooms. Is there a fairy diet?
Well, yes and no. They love natural things. They're not going to eat anything cooked. They will make their own things. They will brew their own brew in that sense. I mean, finding a receptacle or combining things. They like sugar. They prefer it in its natural form, especially honey. That makes them very happy for what? Two reasons. One, it's sticky, so it's fun to play with. And two, it tastes really good. So the fairies, they're all natural. I'm sure that there is sap that they love and bark that they enjoy and certain things that grow out of the ground, that come out of the ground. So whatever comes out of Mother Nature, the fairies generally love.
And you had mentioned the fact that they love the various types of plants. What about crystals? Are there crystals associated with fairies?
Well, sure. If you can hold it up and it sparkles in the sun, the fairies love that. They love sparkly things. Now, they love natural sparkly things. So crystals are perfect for that. Crystals and stones and agates and things you can hold up and see through. You know, again, everything that is entertaining in the fairy world is what they love. So I have in my fairy garden, for example, I have 12 regular stones. They're smooth, but they're natural. And I have some crystals for them, and I have some pieces of purple plastic just because they're fun and colorful. And then I have planted my entire little plant bed in the back with the color that just explodes. And when it's in full bloom, it's like a rainbow of symphony. It's just amazing out there. And you can hear them squeal when certain things bloom. They moved. My fairies moved my sweet pea seeds to the front of the bed because it would make them laugh when I had to deal with the fact that all these sweet peas were growing at the front where the pansies were, and it makes them even laugh harder because the pansies have to find their way through the thicket of the sweet peas, and you know, it's just hysterical for them. And then I had to move the trellis that I bought from where I put it in the back so the sweet peas could climb up them. I had to move it to the front and tie it down, all of which entertained the fairies to no end because I had to do extra things because of what they had done. So, you know, is that their mischief? Yeah, I think it's funny. And I have conversations with the fairies. You know, the neighbors probably want to send me to the loony bin, but I talk to my fairies. I talk to them, and they saved our house in the Thomas Fire in 2017. The fire raged through the neighborhood. It burned down every single house but ours. We had about 30% damage. It burnt the entire back area of the tree, the orchards, all the plants, except it stopped at the fairy garden. Mm. Now, the flames were 80 feet high, but it did not burn the fairy garden. And where I had the fairy gate, that is where the flames stopped. And the fire department couldn't figure that out. Why isn't this on fire? But it didn't, because the fairy said, no, no, not here. Fire, go away. So they protected our house. They also protected, I mean, the damage that we had was easily fixed and repaired, you know, and we've replanted the orchard, and I did it according to fairy trees. I said, well, if we have this power here, why not put it to use? So I really did plant the fruit trees and the trees that they love, that they can play with in the orchard. And I really think that there is a magic to it. There is a gentleman in Ireland, Pat Noone, N-O-O-N-E, you can Google him. He runs his farm based on fairy honor, on where a fairy tree sits, and he works according to fairy seasons, and nothing he does is without the permission of and the help of the fairies. So it's amazing what can happen when you live that way.
What are the fairy seasons?
Well, the fairy seasons, they really stick to the seasons of the moon, the lunar seasons. Their holidays are Beltane, Samhain, Imbolc. They love the solstices. They love all the things that happen naturally with the sun and the moon. So, however, they follow the Celtic calendar, the natural way of living, the wheel of life, that is just in their, in their souls. So they love circles. They don't like squares very much, but they love things that are round, things that move, things that are elemental. And they like the directions. They like north, south, east, west, and they like the energies that come from all those areas. That's their playground.
You know, it's interesting when you were talking about them rearranging the crops on your property. Yeah. I think your next book should be The 1 Minute Fairy Manager. My guest is Kak Young. We're talking about her book, Living the Fairy Life. We'll be back with more of Kak after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Imagine yourself being transported to India, to the banks of the Ganga and an ashram in Rishikesh. Visualize that you are welcome to satsang with an American sannyasi who shares the wisdom of her guru. Your visualization has manifested. Join Satvi Bhagavati Saraswati for inspiration and transformation every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio. On Vox Novus, my guest this week is Kak Young. We're talking about her latest book, Living the Fairy Life. Kak, I've seen photos purporting to be of fairies. Might some of those be real?
Well, it depends on what you're looking at. If you're looking at a thing of Tinkerbell, no. But if you're looking at an energy, perhaps. If you're looking at fairies are very modest and humble. They don't want to be photographed. So they might show up, as a pigeon for you, but they don't want to have the limelight, because it's not joyful and it's not natural to have that happen in their world. They are one with each other. One is not better than the other. So in that terms, in those terms, they don't want to be famous. They want to be praised, but they don't want to, show up on a reality show.
So you'd never find a fairy's footprint on the Hollywood Walk of Fame?
I don't think so. Okay. No. Walt Disney might have gotten Tinkerbell. I think she's got a star, but it's not the way we think it is, or we're taught that it was.
If I wanted to meet a fairy, what would I have to do to enter their realm and connect with them?
Okay, it depends. Well, first of all, I'd say read my book, because it will tell you the different types of energies that you can encounter. If you want to encounter an ethereal fairy, more of from the angelic realms, you would do different things than you would if you want to contact someone from the lower parts, which includes water, you would just go different places and do different things and set up a different path. But you would want to, first of all, understand fairies and understand who they are and what they're about. That's why I wrote this book. That's why they wanted to write this book. Then the next thing you want to do is prepare your home or your area for them by means of planting things that will attract them, by way of arranging things that they would like. If you start to put things out that fairies like, they will be there. They will be attracted by the trees, by the flowers, by the herbs. And what they will mostly pick up on is your intention. Are you trying to hook them, or are you really welcoming them? And when you welcome them, you want to get to know their culture. And this is what I say to people about cats and also about fairies. Pretend you're one of them. Get to know them. If you move to France, you're going to want to learn how to speak French. So it is the same thing in fairy world. Learn how they think. Learn what's important to them. Learn how they communicate and how they want their world to work. Really, you know, read this book, because it will be an introduction for you into their life, their likes, their dislikes, and how you approach them. And then you want to, for example, you know, it's like how you interrelate with fairies. Never take a drink from a fairy. And why? We talked about it earlier, because they have natural things that aren't purified, that aren't the way that humans consume. So you never want to eat something the fairies give you, and you never want to consume a beverage, because you don't know where that's going to take you or put you. The last way to do is to learn how to connect with the fairies, as we were talking about, and that is through plants, through communication, through leaving things out for them, just like you would a guest that you would want to make special in your life or in your home. You want to leave things out for them. You want them to feel welcome. You want to have color and things that fly and flap and twirligigs and things that entertain them at their level. So when they see that space is ready for them, they will start to show up. And then we have to have patience. We wait for them to come back and to make the first move, if you say. You set the stage and then you wait and watch. And you just allow them to come to you in their own way. Because once they know that you are open and welcoming and you've done your homework, they will enter your realm, and they may ask you to enter theirs as well, and you can, but the things you have to be careful of are, you know, not ingesting things that they may offer you or leave you, and certainly not disobeying their ethics and their rules of conduct. So they might even play some little tricks on you, like they did with the sweet peas. You know, you might find some funny stuff going on or things rearranged. I mean, they used to take my shoes and hide them for a day or two. And you know, I would want to wear those shoes to go to work or something, and they wouldn't be there. And pretty soon it would be in the middle of the dining room table. Ah, ha, ha. Very funny to the fairies. So I had to have a meeting with them.
Ooh.
Yeah, I had a meeting and I said, look, guys, here's the thing. Let's have fun. Let's do all that. But work is work. Business is business. And if you mess with or take any of my notes or you think it's cute, it's not cute. It is harmful. And I know you don't want to be harmful. So let's not do that. So I made them a list of things they could mess with. And I would leave like a little stack of cotton balls. Here, play with those. That's fine. So I had to manage the fairies. You're probably not wrong about the 1 minute fairy manager, because it does take management, but not cruelty, not, hey, I'm the boss. It's a whole other way of just kind of corralling them, if you will, so that you can live your life and they can live yours. And, you're not affected by what they find to be hilarious and you might not, such as car keys.
And what does it take for a human to offend a fairy?
Oh, very little. You can swear at them and that will hurt them. You can not praise them or, you know, yell at them for, you know, if I wanted to really anger my fairies, I would have gone out and said, all right, I don't want my sweet peas there. Now, come on, all of you show up. We're going to have a little talk. But first of all, I laughed. And then second of all, I said, okay, now who did this? Which one of you, who had the idea? And of course, you just knew they were falling on the floor laughing. All right, show up. All right, I'll tell you what, I'll give a prize to the person that owns up to this. And that would just make them laugh even more because they trust me. They know that I am playing with them. And I could say, okay, no more cookies. That's it. And they knew that, you know, while the sweet peas are growing, they can't dig them up and replant them, you know. So this year, I started to plant some more along the fence, and I put a little sign up, and I said, fairies, do not steal these. Do not relocate my seeds. And they found that hilarious. So I will find a nasturtium growing in the rose bed, and I say, okay, one is okay. So we play back and forth all the time. And in the back, I told them, you know, they were telling me that the hummingbirds were not happy. Now, how did I know that? I don't know, but I just knew it. And so I put another hummingbird feeder out front because I didn't know this, but the hummingbirds were also living in the jacaranda out front. And fairies love jacaranda because the purple blossoms fall. First of all, they're purple. Second of all, they're these interesting flowers. They cover the ground and it looks like purple snow. So they love those. So I hung a hummingbird feeder out front. Well, that was the magic trick. It was amazing. Now the hummingbirds in the front are happy. The hummingbirds in the back are happy because what the fairies showed me is that the hummingbirds from the front were coming to the back and fighting with the other hummingbirds. Now, I didn't know that. I would have never figured that out. But the fae pointed it out. And so now we have harmony again. And it's beautiful. We got, you know, the hummers in the front, hummers in the back, and happy fairies. It's a beautiful life.
Do fairies ever manifest in human form?
Well, that's the really interesting part, isn't it? I think they can, and I think some do. I don't think they're happy in the human form because humans are too serious and cerebral. So I think their little natures get restricted if they take the human form. So I think they only do it for a time. There are some cultures that think that fairies can actually mate with humans and create, you know, a little human fairy being. I'm not sure that would actually work. I think that once you're a supernatural being, that's who you are, and you can transfigure and become something else, but I think just for a time, like a vacation, because it's against your nature to be that much human and to be that much, I say dense in the matter of the cell structure of, you know, of all the weight we carry as a human being, certainly metaphorically as well as physically. But fairies are lighter and they're composed of much more light than we are. So I wouldn't think that they would be very happy to stay in the human form for very long.
You had mentioned that fairies like crystals. What about essential oils?
They do. They love essential oils because essential oils are like plants. They smell good. And when the oil, the defense mechanism of the plant is really the oil. It's the protector of the plant. And when we extract it, it becomes even denser. So we have this very powerful liquid that is the scent and the essence of the plant. So of course, fairies absolutely adore that. And like humans, we have to dilute it because it is so strong we can burn our skin. The fairies don't have to do that. They can smell it, they can touch it, they can do whatever they want because they are ethereal and sort of unharmable in a certain way. So they love essential oils that way. And I leave little oils out there. Like I said, I leave chopsticks and cotton balls out for the fairies. But I have to be careful because if you leave a cotton ball soaked in peppermint, for example, for a fairy because they love that smell, you have to be careful that you only leave it for a time and pick it up and make sure no animals can get it because that can harm an animal. In order to keep the squirrels off our trees, we hang socks full of mothballs because the squirrels don't like mothballs and that preserves the fruit for us. But I would never hang a mothball anywhere in the fairy part of the garden because that would be offensive to them. It's artificial. It's man-made.
Her book is called Living the Fairy Life. Kak Young, please tell our listeners one more time where they can get your book and find out more about you.
Okay, the book is available wherever you get your books. Amazon certainly has it, and you can have it tomorrow if you have Prime. And it's also available at other bookstores and other online outlets online and around. You can ask your local bookstore if you're supporting your independent bookstore owner. You can ask them to order it if they don't have it in, and it'll be there right away. My website is Kak Young, that's spelled K-A-C, Kitchen, Apple, Charlie, Young, YOUNG.com. All my books are represented there, and I have a page for each book if you just click on the icon. And I just really, really invite you to bring this book into your world. It's going to bring you more joy than you ever expected.
Kak, thank you for enchanting us with your wisdom. Thanks so much for coming back.
Thank you for having me, Victor. It's always an honor and a pleasure to be with you. Namaste, my friend.
And thank you for joining us on Vox Novus. I'm Victor, the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.